Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
They're coming aboard by Sun Express.
Summer Express. Blau Express. Strand Express. Sun Express. Lecker Express. Chill Express. Mit Sun Express günstig in den Urlaub fliegen. Türkei schon ab 59,99 €. Jetzt buchen auf sunexpress.com.
Okay, hello everybody. Happy July. Hope you're having a good one. This week, I decided to mix things up a little bit and actually do a review of a series on HBO called Years and Years. I am going to start doing this every once in a while, maybe once a month or so probably. I'm actually going to try and get in more of a cadence where I have a certain type of episode, you know, once a month. And that way we can get into a little bit more of a normal rhythm and hopefully get more consistent on the week-to-week releases. So one of the episodes that I'm going to do each month is a review of media, whether that's a book, a series, a movie, could be music, could be something else. And today's episode is on the series called Years and Years. You may have heard of it. You may have seen it. You may want to see it. You may have no desire to see it. I don't know. If you have a desire to see it and you have not yet, and you don't want it to be spoiled, then I would recommend not listening to this episode and maybe coming back after you have listened to it. I will try in the future to give a little bit of a heads up so you kind of know what's coming down the line, maybe give you the month, for example, to go through and, you know, view the media or read the book or whatever it is so that you don't, you know, by the time it rolls around, you can actually join me in the episode and not feel like you're spoiled. And on that note, I can actually tell you that here in next month, so in the month of August, I am going to review a book called The Water Knife. So get reading The Water Knife now, about mid-August, maybe mid to late August. We will we'll do a review on that one together. So I'm really excited about that. All right. Well, let's jump into Years and Years. I had heard a lot about this one. I've heard people talking about it. I've seen it mentioned online, especially, you know, for collapsy folk who are looking for media that kind of scratches that itch. Because I know, you know, you feel a little bit crazy thinking about this stuff all the time and the fact that not everyone else does. And so when you see something somewhat mainstream with some mainstream actors and things, it can make you feel a little less crazy because other people are talking about it. And I know, look, in these days, it is it's less and less, I think, that we're feeling that craziness, at least from like a people think that we're weird for thinking this way, because a lot of people are starting to think this way. It's becoming more and more mainstream. So it's no surprise that we start to see more television, more books, more movies that are going this direction. One thing that's really interesting is that Years and Years is not your typical Hollywood apocalyptic, you know, collapse type film or series. It is more down to earth. It's more real to our current situation. And that's even in the title, right? Years and Years. This is about what happens over the course of many years, instead of it just being one epic story that happens, you know, over the course of a few days or what have you. So that said, now's where I'm going to start diving into it. So again, if you don't want spoilers, see you later. If you're happy to stick around, great. I'm not going to give like the entire plot. We're not going to talk through every single thing. So if you just kind of want to listen and see if it's something that you're interested in watching, then feel free. But you've been warned. Okay. It is a 6-episode mini-series on HBO. It was produced by the Red Production Company and BBC in tandem. And the cast includes people like Emma Thompson. She is in, you know, I know her the best from other things. She's sort of the most mainstream actress in it for me. But there was also Russell Tovey, Rory Kinnear, Tania Miller, Ruth Madeley, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, Anne Reed, and Jessica Hines. Some of those, Russell Tovey, I know him from Quantico, but he was also in the BBC's supernatural comedy drama called Being Human. He was in something called The History Boys, a lot of BBC stuff. Here in America, we don't see that much BBC. It's not always on, but especially if you are from the UK, you probably recognize these a lot more. You've got, as I mentioned, Rory Kinnear. He is from The Man of Mode. He played in Othello. He also was in an episode of Black Mirror. All right, you don't need to know everyone and what they're in, but it's got a relatively big cast. And I really love Emma Thompson, though it was kind of hard to watch her in this role because she doesn't play someone that you're supposed to like. So it's set in the UK, follows the drama of a family experiencing collapse between 2019 and 2034. So it's about a 15-year span. It concentrates its time in probably, 5 to 7 of those years, but it gives you a little glimpse at the beginning and a little glimpse at the end. Since it was a miniseries instead of a movie, it does have sort of the time to dig into the drama of the family, like the internal happenings, and also still have time to really hit on the collapse, the societal part of it. And I think it did a good job of kind of playing between those two. I'm not a big drama guy, in every aspect. In my personal life, I hate drama. And in my television or movies, I don't love it. But I thought that it was tolerable, and they did it in a way that reflected the issues and problems and drama that you might have in your life going through collapse. Some of the issues that it covers a lot, and most heavily it covered populist political upheaval, immigration, geopolitical tensions, economic and financial problems, technological advances like AI and transhumanism. And less heavily, it talks about things like food shortages, energy shortages, pandemic, antibiotic-resistant bugs, climate change, terrorism, and mass rioting. So there's a lot, and I'm sure I'm missing stuff there, because there really was a lot of themes, a lot of stuff that it talked about from a collapse perspective. One thing that's fascinating to me is that it was filmed in 2018 and released in 2019. This is the first time I'd seen it in 2025. And if I was just watching it, I might think, these people are familiar with the happenings of the last 5 years and are making a show based off of it, right? It felt quite prescient. But knowing that it was filmed back even before COVID, just in the time of Donald Trump's first presidency, before everything went weird. And again, this was before COVID, this was before Ukraine and Russia, this was before ChatGPT or any sort of generative AI. And so the only things that had really happened societally at this point in 2018, 2019 was in the US, we had Donald Trump, and there was sort of this push towards populist politics. And they definitely play on that, and they make their predictions, and they get some predictions wrong. Of course, you know, predictions are never going to all be right. But what I find very interesting and very fascinating is how close they were on so many things. And even if it wasn't the exact prediction, you know, for example, they predicted Donald Trump wins his second term consecutively from 2020 to 2024. They were wrong about that, right? But what do I want to say? Sort of the feel, the overall vibe and depth and epicness of the things that do happen are mirrored between the show and in real life. And I'll talk about some of those similarities and comparisons here in a moment. But just like they predicted, Donald Trump won in 2020. No, he didn't. But guess what? He won in 2024, and that may even be worse. And I feel like a lot of there's that sort of theme that they were right, but they just weren't, they didn't take it far enough. They didn't picture it being bad enough, at least up to about this point. And as the show goes on, worse stuff happens. In some ways, life in the show is much worse than it is now. For some people, I guess it just depends on who you are and where you live. All right. But after I watched the show, I went and looked at some reviews. I was reading some of the online stuff from like Rotten Tomatoes and those types of things. And it was fascinating because there was all these articles. Again, this was released in 2020 and so, or in 2019. And so the world was viewing this and the media was viewing this pre-2020s. And they're saying things like, quote, "Years and Years is riveting dystopian TV." That's from The Guardian. And, quote, "Years and Years, BBC One, a sharp, nightmarish vision of the future," end quote. And then the Rotten Tomatoes website, the consensus was, quote, "Years and Years scathingly critiques the present with a nihilistic projection of the future," end quote. So you've got all these terms that they're using to describe the show, things like dystopian and nightmarish and nihilistic. And they're all saying, I mean, you know, what a realistic but nihilistic view of what the world will be like. And now here we are today, and I look at it and I say, this is very similar to the life that we're living. And yes, I guess it is nihilistic and it is dystopian and it is nightmarish. So I guess they got that right. But I think about the way that we talk about people who talk about collapse, right? People will listen to my podcast and be like, "Oh, it's too pessimistic. It's too dystopian. I don't want to think that way." And yet, you know, that ends up being true. Just because you want to say that it's pessimistic or that it's nihilistic or whatever, it doesn't stop it from being the reality that we live in and that we all figure out how to cope with. Okay, so with that, let's talk through some of the timelines and some of the themes that the show goes through. And then at the end, I'm going to talk a little bit about the things that I loved and didn't love about the show. For now, though, let's just look at it from a practical point. What did they get right? What did they get wrong? What things happened and how can we relate it? So the first of all, in the first episode, it takes place starting in 2019. And then it projects forward through years to 2025. And it's interesting, I love the way that they do the transitions and you watch the fireworks showing what year it is and the music is epic and you see the kids grow up and the newscasters are in the background talking about the things that are happening. And the big point of the story in episode one is that the Chinese build an island in contested waters and they build basically a military base there, and the U.S. nukes it, and they projected this I think it was in 2024 or 2025 that this happened. And you look at something like that, and you're like, you might be like, okay, like the U.S. is just going to send a nuke, right? And it's not, and you're telling me that's not going to end in this mutually assured destruction. And yet, we have lived through something since 2025 or since 2020 that we also would have been like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, that type of thing could really happen, whatever, which was the COVID pandemic. And one might argue watching the first episode and seeing how life is now and what we lived through with the pandemic, that the pandemic was worse than a single nuclear bomb, right? From a death perspective, absolutely. From the day-to-day lives of everyone involved, it was more epic. From the length of time in which people were affected, it was more intense. I personally, and I've said this before as part of my projections for the year, for these next few years, I think that someone will use a tactical nuke. And I don't think that that means that we're going to have mutually assured destruction. I think that the bounds of what a country can push is going to be stretched, and other countries may not react in an effort to de-escalate. The first person to fire a tactical nuke does not necessarily mean that that country is going to be obliterated by all the others because of the desire to de-escalate. So anyway, it didn't feel that unrealistic to me in the show to watch the U.S. fire a nuclear weapon and destroy this island, which killed tens of thousands of Chinese. Now, another part that was really interesting about this is that in the beginning of episode two, right at the beginning, they reflect on how weird it was that this epically bad thing happened and that life then moved forward like normal. One member of the family, she's a prominent activist. She's being interviewed on TV. She was actually present when she was in Vietnam when the nuke goes off in these disputed seas. And she says, quote, 6 months ago, we all thought we were going to die. And then we realized the day after Hiroshima happened, the sun came up. People got out of bed. They went to work. A nuclear bomb exploded and the West just carried on. And then this is kind of reiterated later by the matriarch of the family, the mom, the grandma. And she basically says, you know, we thought this was the end. 6 months ago, we sat here as a family and all the alarms went off in our house and our phones were blaring and we thought we were all going to die. They could hear the air raid sirens there in the UK and were worried that bombs would start dropping and they didn't. And that kind of sets the perspective for them. It changes their paradigm about the world. And I just think it was such an apt comparison to COVID and the paradigm shift that COVID was for so many people. And yet we've moved on, right? We're past it. COVID for most people is not a daily thought anymore. It's not a daily concern. There are still lingering effects, just as there are in the show, you know, from the nuclear weapon. And what's interesting, again, is that this was all episode one. Episode one starts in 2025, and then after 2025 is when things start to get a lot worse. And I will say that I think much has already happened that they predict happening in the future, or it's already ramping up and we're already sort of kind of getting into that ugliness. Okay. So, for example, in the next episodes, I believe it was episode two, there's conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Now, it's different than how it happened in real life. Obviously, in real life, Russia invaded Ukraine and they've been in a war for years ever since. In the show, it's a main plot point that Ukraine actually votes and they vote to become part of Russia. And this is it's a similar problem because Russia is still in a way invading. They come in with their military and take over because it was voted into power or voted to be that way, which, you know, I know that there are many Ukrainians who it's a contested idea and there are Ukrainians who wish to become part of Russia. And the story could have happened this way in the end if Putin had been able to, for example, infiltrate and basically hack into the elections and make it appear that Ukrainians wanted to become part of Russia just basically to justify an invasion. It didn't happen that way. They just straight up invaded. But the results end up being the same, and that's many Ukrainians were persecuted. One of the main storylines here is that there is mass immigration out of Ukraine and into the UK. And one of the main characters of the family here, he works in housing for refugees. And he meets someone who was deported from Ukraine, or I guess left Ukraine as a refugee because he was tortured and persecuted for being gay. And this character also happens to be gay and they end up together. By this character, I mean the main character, the member of the family who's in charge of housing. So they meet up and end up in a relationship. And then just in that vein, sort of that theme of geopolitics, there's also later on, there's far left revolutions in Europe, which lead to widespread riots. There's terrorism. You know, there's a moment where bombs go off in London and it causes a lot of tension and issues as far as being able to come in or leave countries. Everything kind of is shut down in a way. It's being borders are closed, neighborhoods, borders are tightened up. And of course, that would lead and did lead to a lot of panic, a lot of xenophobia, all those types of things. All right, going to another theme. Technology was a massive theme in this one. So around 2025, again, the end of episode one, beginning of episode two, people are losing their jobs to AI, which I thought was fascinating, again, because in 2018, when this was written, there was no AI, right? I mean, I shouldn't say there was no AI. There was AI. We've had AI for decades. But there was no generative AI discovery and advancement to where we have today, which is the type of AI that people really think is going to take, especially white-collar jobs, computer jobs, those types of things. This hadn't happened yet. It was still, you know, a couple years or a few years away from ChatGPT really becoming a thing. But yeah, this predicted by 2025, people would lose their jobs to AI. People have robots in their houses. Again, one of the main characters, a daughter in the family, ends up fleeing a romantic night. She had gone out on a date with somebody, and as they were getting intimate, she found out that he has sex with the household robot. And so she's like, nope, that's disgusting. I'm out of here. And it's interesting because the robot is like this clunky, you know, like, I don't even know how to describe it, like Optimus type robot. And the dude is, you know, is, yeah, it doesn't, like, we're at a point now where the robots that are going to be used for this purpose look like people. They look like women. Now, you may have seen, or men, you may have seen videos or pictures or whatever of the types of robots that are in development. And I just found it humorous that this guy was doing it with a very, like, metallic, large, masculine-looking robot. But, yeah. So, I mean, they've got that right, though, right? That people are turning their intimacy, whether it's in a sexual nature or just a romantic nature, towards AI. There's this fear that, like, our children's first loves, I don't know if you've heard that, will, like, be with AI, because AI has this capability of appearing empathetic. It listens to you. It validates you. It feeds you back what you want to hear. And so for a lot of lonely people, both kids who are just figuring out relationships to adults who might struggle in relationships, right? They're turning towards this, towards AI, and finding intimacy there. All right. Two of the main characters, they are parents. They are concerned about one of their children. And the mom looks at the kid's internet history, and the husband's like, hey, we agreed not to do that. She's like, I know, but something's going on here. I can tell. We need to find out what's happening. So they look at her internet history and see that it's full of search terms based around the word trans. And they are like, oh, okay, this makes so much sense. We know what's going on. Let's approach her. So they approach her, and they approach her super lovingly and trying to, you know, tell her that she's accepted and they love her, that being trans is not a problem. And she was like, the daughter was all relieved that they knew. And then she's like, wait a minute. I'm not transsexual, mom and dad. I'm transhumanist. And it's just this kind of humorous moment where the parents go into it being loving and accepting until she says she's transhumanist, in which case they are like they are not willing to listen to that. They don't want to hear it. And it ends in this big fight, and you are not going to become transhumanist, which, if you're not familiar with transhumanism, it's basically the idea of merging humans with robots or with computers or technology, essentially, right? It can go as far as this idea that we're going to be uploaded into the cloud, which is a theme in the show, but it can be as simple as, you know, the first thing that the daughter does is she gets a transplant in her hands that allows it to basically act as a telephone. And I found this kind of funny because it's not like it didn't act as a smartphone. It didn't become like this visual thing. All it allowed her to do was like put her hand to her face and make calls through her hand, which I think is technology that we could easily implement now. We just don't, because I think there's so much more potential, and going through that work to modify someone just to have a mobile phone in their hands is not worth it. But as the show goes on, she gets more and more of these procedures done. She breaks away with a friend, takes $10,000 that her dad had given her as like her college fund or whatever, and she blows it on getting her friend this botched eye implant that ends up like destroying the friend's sight, and the eye is bad, and it was like a scam. Years later, she gets an implant in her brain that gives her access to the internet. There were some things about this that I didn't love. I didn't feel like were super realistic, not from a technology standpoint, but from like the it was like part of this government program. So she has access to suddenly like hack into all of this stuff. And she's like this super hacker. That part went a little far for me. But then again, this is also 4 to 5 years in the future. So for me to say that that's, you know, I shouldn't say that it seems unrealistic because you never know what could happen in 4 to 5 years. And then she has these dreams of being uploaded into the cloud and living forever. But there's this question about, like, will her consciousness remain or will it just be like her memories that are stored and those types of things. And then the last thing on technology that I'll say is that it also shows some positives. The grandmother, the matron of the family, she has macular degeneration and she's starting to go blind. It's really hard for her to see. And she finds out that she's able to get this surgery done. It's really non-invasive. It's pretty quick and easy. And it will like prevent her from going blind, which is great, right? It's good to have some positive aspects as well. However, she does find that the wait list was like 3 years long unless she could pay an absurd amount of money up front, which she ended up doing. Again, there's the theme of immigration. So the character that I had mentioned, you know, he meets this immigrant, falls in love with him, they end up marrying. And over the years, one thing that I find is really interesting is that the immigration battle never really ends. He makes it from Ukraine to the UK, but from there on, his life is sort of up in the air. He doesn't have a solid place that he can call home. He ends up getting kicked out of the UK, and he gets arrested and taken back to Ukraine, where he has to hide his homosexuality because they would kill him for that. They do try to find him. He escapes. He gets out. He's able to make his way back into a different country. He goes through, finds his way back to Spain. And in Spain, he's stuck. Again, there's all these problems in Europe and the immigration is tight and the UK won't take him back, but his husband wants to be with him. So his husband goes and gets him. And here's a pretty massive spoiler. So as they're coming back, they run into all of these issues with immigration people scamming them, like, yes, we can get you home, and then they steal their passports or their money or whatever. They end up finding someone who is moving people via these boats, and you've probably seen all the stories online of this type of thing happening. They get on the boat. They make it most of the way there. The boat capsizes. It's filled with too many people. It's too heavy. There's a storm or just bad waves, that type of thing. And most of the people on the boat die, including our main character who has married the Ukrainian gentleman. The Ukrainian gentleman makes it. He survives. He's able to live in the UK for a while. Again, now without his husband, without really a home with anyone that, you know, the family cares about him and loves him. Most of them do. Some of them resent him for it, for what happened to their brother. In the end, he ends up being taken. And two of the times, the first time that he was kicked out of the UK and sent back to Spain was because somebody who was resentful reported him. And the second time it was essentially the same thing. One of the brothers who was resentful reported him again. However, this time it was to a concentration camp, essentially. They call it erstwhile. It's a concentration camp in England. And of course, I'm watching this episode while we're learning about alligator Alcatraz here in Florida in the U.S. And it really feels essentially like the same thing. They put these people here. They call it a refugee camp, but really it's like an internment camp. They don't have access to cell phones. They don't have access to get any information out, to talk to anybody. They're stuck there. And the Emma Thompson, who I talked about earlier, she's this political populist. She's basically the Donald Trump of the UK. And she basically just says, yeah, you know what? Like, we need to let these people just die out, essentially. No one's able to know what's happening here. They're a burden. We're going to send people to these camps and we're going to let them sort of fade away into non-existence. Okay, so for the last sort of theme here, topic, before I get to an actual part of the show that I want to play for you, is the economy. So as I mentioned before, joblessness sort of increases as people, as AI takes over and people are losing their jobs. One family member has to sell their home after the wife loses their job to AI. They also lose all of their money overnight when an American bank collapses. And that's all the money they got from selling their house. So basically they sold the house, they put the money in the bank. It was an American bank, it collapsed, they lost their money, and they never get it back. And this starts this whole thing where the guy says that he was working 13 jobs. I don't know if he was being facetious, if he was actually working that many jobs, but he's doing all these different things. He's a drug tester. They're doing experimental drugs on him, one of which goes horribly wrong. Another one is he's a bike courier, so he's delivering parcels and stuff on his bike. He was a banker, right? And so he goes from this white collar job, making a good amount of money, to like making, I can't remember what they said, 50 pence, something like that, a parcel that he delivers. And there's all these fees that he has to pay. And yeah, it's just, it's an interesting look at sort of what might be in store for those of us who are in sort of more white collar jobs. That's me. I get to work from the comfort of home, right, on my computer. And I am under no illusion that that is something that I'm going to be able to enjoy forever. And there's all sorts of economic issues that happen. Everybody sort of starts to suffer economically. It becomes this whole thing where there's like blackouts, and that's affecting jobs and people, you know. I have given you like maybe 10% of what happens in the show. There is so much, so much. There's a lot of depth. I know I've kind of shared these things in a very shallow manner, just kind of talking about the themes and the things that it's talking about. But there's a lot of depth to it, a lot of complexity. And I really like that because it shows the polycrisis. It's this convergence of issues happening all at the same time. Towards the end of the show, in the last episode, there is a monologue from, again, the matriarch. She kind of goes on this rant that we're going to listen to because I thought it was interesting. Do I agree 100% with everything said? Well, I don't know. But it's fun to hear the take that she has and of course that the writers have. So with that said, I am going to play that now. It is a bit lengthy. It's going to be a few minutes here. To give you some context, she is sitting down with her whole family, all of the kids and the grandkids. And they're talking, they're kind of reminiscing on all the things that have happened. They're reminiscing and talking about the issues that the family is currently facing. They've got this beloved home that she has lived in for years and years that she is now deciding to sell, kind of being forced into sell for the money. And they're all sad about that. And this is what she has to say.
It's been tough this century. Tougher than I ever thought. Senior, how many days have passed since the 31st of December 1999?
10,636.
10,000 days. It's a blink of an eye. 10,000 days ago, I was here in this house. Your mother was in the kitchen. And I thought, here we are. We've done it. Nice little world. Well done, the West. We've made it. We've survived. What an idiot. What a stupid little idiot I was. But I didn't see all the clowns and monsters heading our way, tumbling over each other, grinning. Dear God, what a carnival. And that's all it took. 10,000 days. More wine. But it proves my point. We all need money. The house is going up for sale. I'll get myself a nice little place and you can divide the rest between the four of you.
Grandma's only three of us.
So this part is more contextual. You can kind of ignore this and just pay attention to the rest of her monologue.
And I mean the four of you. And I won't get that much. God knows we're still in a slump. But this house has been losing money for decades. It's a relic. So this particular relic is saying, let's move on.
It's very kind of you.
Yes, it is.
Perhaps, but it still doesn't alter the fact that it's all your fault.
What is?
Everything. All of you.
What do you mean?
The banks, the government, the recession, America, Mrs. Raw. Every single thing that's gone wrong, it's your fault. What did I do? Where's this come from?
Sometimes I get blamed for an awful lot, but how am I responsible for the entire world?
Because we are, every single one of us. We can sit here all day blaming other people. We blame the economy, we blame Europe, the opposition, the weather. And then we blame these vast sweeping tides of history, you know, like they're out of our control, like we're so helpless and little and small. But it's still our fault. You know why? It's that £1 T-shirt. A T-shirt that costs £1. We can't resist it. Every single one of us. We see a T-shirt that costs £1 and we think, oh, that's a bargain, I love that. And we buy it. Not for best, heaven forfend, but nice little T-shirt for the winter to go underneath, that'll do. And the shopkeeper gets 5 miserable pence for that T-shirt, and some little peasant in a field gets paid 0.01 pence. And we think that's fine, all of us. And we hand over our quid and we buy into that system for life. I saw it all going wrong when it began in the supermarkets, when they replaced all the women on the till with those automated checkouts.
No, that's not our fault. I hate those things. I always have.
Oh, stand
up. They drive me mad.
Yes, but you didn't do anything, did you? 20 years ago, when they first popped up, did you walk out? Did you write letters of complaint? Did you shop elsewhere? No. You huffed and you puffed and you put up with it. And now all those women are gone. And we let it happen.
No, but we're still...
And I think we do like them, those checkouts. We want them. Because it means we can stroll through, pick up our shopping, and we don't have to look that woman in the eye. The woman who's paid less than us. She's gone. Got rid of her. Sacked. Well done. So, yes, it's our fault. This is the world we built. Congratulations. Cheers, all.
All right. So I just love that. I think it's powerful. She's speaking to all the reasons why everything that's going on is our fault, right? And there's always this question of where do we put the blame? Is there blame? Is it helpful at all to place blame? And she takes the stance that, hey, look, it's every single one of us. We built this world. And while she's clearly not saying that the weight of the responsibility lays on one single person, but that in our own ways, each of us contributes to this system, and each of us in our own way requires something from this system, and each of us in our own way is not doing our part to stop it. And that's where, at this point in the show, this last episode, a couple of the characters sort of take that to heart, and it actually inspires them to take more radical action. And, you know, I felt a little bit of that as well after watching the show. I was like, man, I should do something. And what that is and how that, you know, what power do we have? And all those questions come to mind. In the show, it is a bit unrealistic, perhaps, because, you know, there are individuals or a few people that band together and make big changes to things like the erstwhile camp that I had talked about earlier, the concentration camp. They end up getting that shut down, and that leads to the arrest of the UK Prime Minister. One thing I feel that that was a little exaggerated. So that was one part of the show that I thought, okay, to say that like these 3 or 4 people can go and make this huge, massive difference kind of cut through a lot of that and didn't really show a lot of the details and all that. The reality of people who take a stand, it's often going to be a lot worse, right? There's going to be dire consequences for many and for most who are willing to be the one to speak out and be the loudest. And so there's, you know, it showed that part being a bit more optimistic than I think is reality. would have maybe been nice to see several stand up and a few succeed, but the majority not. That said, I do like that this didn't, they didn't pretend that, you know, the UK prime minister, who was this populist figure being arrested, saved everything, or that because the erstwhile concentration camp was shut down, that the world was saved and collapse was averted. No, it goes on to kind of describe very briefly, it goes through the next several years and shows you little glimpses, and they start to get worse and worse, and more is happening. It's a ball that is rolling and can't be stopped, which is the opposite of what you typically will see in most Hollywood movies. And that leads us to the end, which I have to be honest and say I didn't love the end to this show. I wish it would have been taken a different direction, simply because it felt like it kind of took away from the purpose and perspective of the main show and put it onto something that didn't really feel like it belonged. And that was that one of the main characters, I mentioned her at the beginning, she was present when the nuclear weapon went off. She took in a large amount of radiation, and it's known throughout the show that she's going to die early. She has maybe 10 years left. And it ends with her in this sort of interview with, you know, within this clean room. There's these people that are talking to her about what she's about to do, which is upload her consciousness to the cloud. And, you know, her family is at home waiting to see if she shows up on the other side, basically. If once she's passed away, does her consciousness still communicate with them through their in-house robot system? It's basically like our Siri or Google Home or whatever, Alexa, for example. But it's highly AI, right? And so they're waiting to see if she's going to come out on the other end. And first of all, with generative AI, we now know that, like, you can already take somebody's likeness, right? Like, they could create like a Tom Cruise speak-alike, you know, that sounds like Tom Cruise and says the types of things that he might say it and the way that he might say it. And that could be my Alexa, right? And like, how would they know if it was actually her or not? That's one thing. They don't tell you if she makes it. It ends before you find out if her consciousness was uploaded and she survived that. But mostly, I didn't care. I know that sounds terrible. Like, but the show was about this family, sure, but it was really telling the story of humanity. And it was telling the story of the direction that we were heading over years and years. And it kind of abruptly cut that off. She was actually in this interview describing what happened in the years leading up to this moment. And they cut her off and stop her and go into this process and procedure of her consciousness being uploaded. And I was like, wait. I want to know what happens. What direction does society take? What happens after all of this? I just felt like it was jarring, I guess. It didn't fit with the rest of the series, and it wasn't my favorite. Now, that said, you may have loved it if you've seen this before, and you did. If I missed something that you felt that it added to the story, I'd love to hear it. Feel free to reach out and give me your thoughts and your comments. That said, overall, I thought it was a great series. It's got a different vibe to it than most of the series that you might see, especially that I think I'm used to seeing with, you know, there's a difference between American television and British television for sure, just in the way that it's filmed and the vibe and all the cinematography and all of that. And this had that more, I don't know, more real feel to it. And I really did enjoy that. I think the writing was wonderful. I wish there was going to be a second. It sounds like there's not. Simply, he didn't want to have to answer the question about whether or not she survived her consciousness being uploaded. But I would love to see it from the perspective of a new family or a different family. What happens after this time frame, right? What happened from 2028 or 2029 in detail through the 2030s? You were right. You were so right about what happened, you know, in that first decade. Let's talk about what happens in the decade after that, because I'd be curious to see it. All right, let me know your thoughts. If you have seen Years and Years, give me your review. Tell me where I got it wrong. Tell me what you liked. and we'll talk again next week. Thanks. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.